Ready, Freddy's?
Yes, Dad, Dee Dee.
I was born ready.
Alright.
It's episode 141 of the PC Gamer Podcast. It's Friday, and it's time to curl up and get cozy with your favorite PC gaming editors, and that better be us. On today's show, E3, one-time bomb or full-on bust? Flagship studios, anyone need downtown San Francisco office space? Games for Windows Live lets you keep your pretty pennies, and PC Gamer Malaysia, a few tacos short of a combo plate? We think so. All this and more right after these dulcet tones. We're back! Thanks for your patience during last week's break, everybody. It's never easy to be away from you all. And it is a sadness that inspires long faces and binge drinking, but we are back on the wagon this week, and it is all wheatgrass and low carbs and a fat, fat podcast for you. I am Kristen, Captain Stubing Salvatore. I'm joined today by Dan Doc Stapleton.
Doc? I'm a doc now?
As well as Evan Gopher Lottie.
Goof, goof.
Andy Bauman, your cruise director.
Hey guys, I was missing you guys badly last week.
And our very own Vicky Stubing, former intern Andy Salisbury.
I didn't know what to do with my time. I was at a loss.
Well, I'm glad everybody's back. Like the Love Boat, this podcast promises something for everyone. Unlike E3, which was really more of an Exxon Valdez, I would say, depending on who you asked. Peter Moore has called it soulless. Head of EA John Riccitiello has eloquently opined, "I hate E3." And yet the ESA says, "Get ready for E309, folks." So what do y'all think? Is E3 done? Does anyone care about E3 anymore? I'm particularly interested to hear from the Andes, from Andy Squared, about this as people who are kind of newer to the industry. What do you guys think? Is there buzz about E3 outside? Like, we're sort of in it.
You want to take it first, Mr. Bauman?
Sure. Well, I didn't really follow it too closely this year, and maybe that's just because I was sort of sick of, like, live blogging and that whole concept. I don't know. It just doesn't really appeal to me. But it seemed like, from at least talking to the OXM guys and you guys, that there was actually a better show for the journalists and the story writers, because they got more intimate meetings with the, the producers of the games. They got demos, got, like, way more hands-on time and a more in-depth experience, which can only translate into better articles for me as an end user. So I was okay with it being, low-key. And it's not like I've ever been there, so I can't say I miss the crowds or the buzz or anything. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with that for the most part, just because, as someone who also has never gone, it's just nice to be able to know that the press outlets that I'm most interested in are going to have the most time. But if what, people like Peter Moore are looking for is a big trade show where they can have lots of people come out and just have a big party, maybe they could just look elsewhere.
Were you guys, for previous E3s, like before it had been downsized, did you used to pay attention to the buzz? Did you follow it? Did you ever watch the news coverage and media outside of game journals?
Like, a little bit here and there, and it was always like, oh yeah. Well, I think when I was younger, for sure, it was definitely like, oh my god, E3. Someday, maybe I'll go. But you know what? It was mostly just to... I just wanted to meet people in the industry, developers, and, you guys. But now that I talk to you on a weekly basis...
Now the gloss is off.
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
I have to wonder, though, with the comments about E3 from Peter Moore and everybody else, if they're talking about just the show itself or just the almost complete lack of anything coming out of it. I mean, because, like, I'm all for a smaller show where, we get to, actually have the intimate hands-on, but there has to be something to have an intimate hands-on with.
Oh, and you're saying that they didn't really have any good announcements for you or any stories for you to get?
Yeah, I didn't actually go this year. This is, like, the first E3 I've missed in 4 years, but I didn't really miss having, and, I didn't really wish I had gone that much, just because, looking back, it's like, what did I miss, really?
I was just going to ask if you used to cover E3 for the Daily Herald, like if that was something you showed up in.
Not for the Daily Herald, but I did go in 2006. That was like the last big one, I guess. And it was it was a little overwhelming because there were 60,000 people there. But I mean, for people like Peter Moore, the comments they're making, it seems like they're a little upset with the amount of enthusiasm they're getting during the event. Like when you have consumers at the event, you're naturally, when you're making announcements, you're getting big cheers, getting people riled up. You're seeing that response. And it's almost like, I don't know, maybe they want that sort of enthusiasm. They want mainstream media outlets to film that enthusiasm, to show it to people. I don't know.
Yeah, there was. So I was there last week, which is why we didn't podcast. Logan and I were there. And the general feeling was sort of covered, like ran the spectrum across this. It was really, really great to be able to move around. We got to see everybody that we wanted to see. We actually got time to like sit and have meetings. We did get lots of one-on-one time with developers. We got lots of time to do like actual Q&As with developers, which is always really hard to do in the past. On the other side of that, though, the general feeling as people were like walking around the convention center was one of, wow, this is sort of a bummer. Like, I think that it was great to be able to kind of get to see what we wanted to see. We were missing the sort of, like, excitement and electricity of having so many people there super excited about the same thing that we're excited about. On the other hand, I very distinctly remember being at E3 2006, and I was walking around with Greg Viderman, and there were so many people there, you actually couldn't get something to eat. It was, like, impossible. Like, they were running out of food in all of the concession stands, if you could even get into the concession stands. Like, I just remember having this moment where Greg had waited too long to eat, and I swear he was like the Incredible Hulk in the middle of like the concession. Just like, he was like, tearing at his clothing and like freaking out.
We had limited amount of time to get, you know, from appointment to appointment, and you know we don't have time to wait 45 minutes in line for a hot dog.
Right. So I would say it's something that, you know, I think we may have even talked about it on the podcast before, but in fact, I may have talked about it on the podcast, that a lot of people I heard saying, and that I tend to agree with, is that it would be great to do something like the Leipzig Games Convention. Now, granted, that convention center is actually larger than the Staples Center, but what they do is they have the business center, which is not open to the public or anybody. You have to have credentials to get into that part of the convention center. And they have set up, you know, basically what this year's E3 was, they have separate rooms set up for, you know, every developer, every publisher who wants one. And you go in and you have one-on-one meetings and it's quiet and you can hear one another and you can sort of, it's all in one area of the convention center. It's easy to get around. And then when you want to, and the rest of the world can go out into the big giant hoopla circus. So there's lots of big, exciting stuff for the mainstream press to cover. There are tons of people there creating really nice buzz. But when you actually need to get business done, you sort of go to this other part of the building where you can do that. And I would love to see something like that.
But, you know, again, like I was saying earlier, I don't think that even if you had that set up if the same information was doled out this year in that setup, it would still be a disappointing E3 just because there was so little actually announced.
But I wonder, Dan, if the reason there's so little announced is because everyone's like, E3, like, I wonder if we'll see more announcements coming at, like, PAX and Leipzig and shows that are coming up.
Yeah, I'm sure they were saving it for some time that would get more media coverage just because this is, you know, it's fizzled. E3 is kind of, blah.
It's kind of chicken egg thing. Now, all of that said, it was great from a business perspective to be able to see people and talk to them. And it was the second E3 ever in my, like, eight E3s that I came home and hadn't lost my voice. I wasn't like sick and, you know. So that
you
was kind
to
of
yell
exciting.
Over all the pounding music.
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of exciting. But I'm kind of curious to hear, if anybody wants to, when they call in and leave messages or write in with questions for next week, I'd be really interested to hear what our readers and listeners think about E3, whether you're just like, whether everybody feels the way Andy and Andy feel.
That's like a team.
Yeah. Andy and Andy. So anyway, so E3 put us in a little bit of a bad mood. And you know what? So did the news that Flagship Studios has laid off almost all of its employees. That's a huge bummer. And coming right on the heels, the irony of the announcement of Diablo 3, which is where a lot of those guys used to work. So Dan Stapleton, I know you've been following this. Can you give us like a 30-second description, after which time I will cut you off, of what's happening?
Yeah, and basically, Flagship seems to have run out of money. They couldn't pay everybody, so they shut down all their development on both Hellgate, like continuing to update that for subscribers, and on Mythos, which I think is arguably the bigger loss. I mean, to, you know, say what you will about Hellgate, but Mythos looks like it was, you know, going to be some fun. There's currently some debate over, I mean, like the game is still up, and I guess there's talk that maybe Namco will step in and save it, but you like they took off all the subscription options. They're not billing people for a subscription anymore. There was a little bit of a fiasco where they took that down, took down the subscription page, and people couldn't actually cancel their subscriptions.
But they're not being charged for.
Yeah,
them,
but they didn't say that right.
They forgot to mention that part, right?
Yeah. So this all happened over a weekend, so it was kind of a problem for everybody involved. So
I think the most interesting thing that has emerged from this is, in fact, that now there's this there's a conflict over who it's a dispute, I should say, over who actually owns the rights to Hellgate and to Mythos, because
right.
Flagship is saying that they own it, but they have a Korean partner and investor, Hanbitsoft, and they're claiming that they own it.
Yeah, I guess what happened was that Flagship had actually mortgaged the rights to their intellectual properties, and I guess Hanbit owns a chunk of that, I guess. I'm not exactly sure how the financials work out, but...
I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah, and you can mortgage pretty much any asset, can't you?
Yeah, it's just like Monopoly. You flip it over and...
I was going to say the exact same thing.
Yeah.
That's
so
awesome.
So, yeah, I mean, they had been having, I guess, you know, a shortage of capital for a while, so that's how they were financing themselves, and that seems to have run out.
Do you think that they're, you know, it's a pretty well-known story in the industry that Bill Roper and a number of the other guys who are co-founders of Flagship worked used to be on the Diablo team at Blizzard and parted ways with Blizzard in a bit of an unfortunate circumstance, you know, and sort of left in a bit of a huff to start Flagship. Do you think that they're bumming right now as they're watching all of these announcements of Diablo 3 all over the place? Or
I mean, it can't be a good time for any of them. I mean, they obviously had you know good intentions with Hellgate, and you know some of that didn't come off as well as they had hoped. And you know it's got to suck to see the last couple of years of your life kind of you know implode. I'm sure a lot of them are still very proud of the work they did on Hellgate, but you know it's not really going to be a lasting legacy.
Yeah, I should add that we just on a personal note, we really like all those guys. We're sad that that this is happening to them, and hope that things get turned around. I do think it's an interesting, you know, look at. I think, you know, there were a lot of very mixed feelings about Hellgate, and I think it's a really interesting look at how mercurial people can be, players can be, and people can be in this industry. Good games, you know, only the best survive, I think, is what we're seeing for the most part.
Well, and you got to wonder how much of it has to do with their you know kind of unconventional business model with their subscription setup,
right?
I mean,
yes.
that was, you know, a problem from the beginning, just that it was unclear what value you were going to get for your money. And it's like, oh, I can play this for free. What exactly am I getting? Why should I pay? You know,
I mean, that's just got to be a difficult thing for the developers themselves to manage when they're sort of taking into mind with the content, their business model at the same time. They sort of have to balance that rather than simply focusing on the content itself. And, you know, how is this going to balance with free play users and paid users? And I don't know, it seems like a better idea just to specialize in today's market. But
and how bummed are the people who bought a lifetime subscription?
Right.
Oh, goodness.
It was like 200 bucks to be a founding member. And you'd get, like, you know, updates for life.
Or 2 years.
Yeah,
or a year.
A year, yeah. You've probably seen the last of those, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I guess they're not really in a position to refund that, are they?
Well, and how would they? You know, how would you even determine? Do you just, like, prorate? I mean, you know,
and
lifetime is hard to prorate, like.
Yeah, well, I mean, you would. What would be ideal is if they could give back, like, all but... Like if you the money that you would have spent on a year subscription they would keep and they'd give you back the rest.
Right.
But I guess they don't have any money to do that with, so you know, it's not really an option.
Yep. Well, enough with the bad news. Let's talk about some good news. Games for Windows Live. Now totally free. That's kind of good news, isn't it?
Yeah, and actually Microsoft does have some money on hand, so like all the people that subscribe to Windows Live and didn't log in with their Xbox to that same account, they are giving that money back, which I think is you know pretty cool of them to do, because I don't think legally they had to, because they're still providing the service that you paid for. So they at least averted a major PR disaster with that. It's still, I mean, I still am not all that high on the Games for Windows Live service, though. They're promising an update in fall, so maybe
they're
that will
change. An update in fall, but as we actually, the whole PC Gamer team had a phone conversation with Kevin Unangst, who is Microsoft's sort of representative on all things Games for Windows lately. And we were asking Kevin, what does this exactly mean? Does this mean that we're going to see what will we see that will be alike or not alike to what 360 users get? And his answer was really interesting. He basically said, there's no point in talking about it that way. Like, when it comes to Games for Windows Live, we're really just focusing on what Windows users and what PC users will want. So we don't even want to talk about what 360 users want. But, it's hard for me to believe that Windows users wouldn't want, like, the Netflix capabilities and that kind of a thing. So
yeah, that's hard for me to believe too. I mean, you got to think it's in their interest to transition as much of that content as possible. With the fall update, they are going to start rolling out paid content updates as well as free content updates, I guess. So
the paid content will be the stuff on Marketplace, not
Marketplace.
A subscription.
Exactly. So
there's still going to be no subscription fees, which mm-hmm. Really they should have figured that out before they launched the service. Microsoft has this kind of annoying policy where they want to launch a product as soon as possible, regardless of what state it's in, and then like iterate until they get it right. And it's like what they did with the Zune. They put out the first generation Zune, and it kind of bombed. Nobody liked it. And then they put out the version 2.0 and version 2.0 firmware, and it started getting good reviews. But the brand is still so tarnished by the negative reception of the first one that nobody wants a second one, even though it gets good reviews.
And you're absolutely right. And I guess the thing I'm most curious about is if this is a step toward them trying to compete with Steam a little bit, because at least in the Xbox 360 community, there's a lot of frustration among developers because it's very difficult to get certified to publish on Xbox Live, games on Xbox Live Arcade. It's really just a difficult and long process, I guess, for a lot of them. So I'm not sure if they're heading that direction.
I actually asked Kevin that specifically when we spoke to him. Uh-huh. And his answer was, we're not making any sort of announcements about anything like that right now, but obviously we pay a lot of attention to what Steam is doing. I mean, it seems pretty obvious as they implement Marketplace. That's exactly what it is. It's a digital download service. So while they, they don't have any plans to offer like games through that right now, I have to imagine they're going to be moving in that direction.
They did say it's on the roadmap to have a download service, but there are no announcements to make at this point. So I mean, obviously, they've got to offer that at some point.
I also think, there's a number of people have suggested that, like, oh, it'll be too little too late. Like, Steam already has the corner on that market. But you know what I have found interesting is we've watched lots of publishers aim to have their games available on multiple digital download services. So you see, Ubisoft's games, I think, are an excellent example. They have tons of stuff on Steam, but they also have tons of stuff on Direct to Drive.
Quick side note, can we stop saying digital download?
It's redundant.
Please.
What would you like to call it, Dan? Fluffy Bunny?
Download service?
Analog download?
Digital distribution? That'd be good. It's just digital download is a little bit redundant.
One of the other things that they announced that was sort of interesting but kind of made us laugh was DX11 is coming.
Yeah.
Well, of course it's coming. I mean, they've had 10 of them so far, so one would think they'd go to 11 eventually. The thing that kind of frustrates about this is they're announcing this at a point where people are still kind of iffy on DX10. The majority of people are probably still using XP, so still, even if they have a DX10 capable graphics card, they're still not using DX10.
And then there's DX10.1, which no games use.
I guess Assassin's Creed launched with it, but then they took it out in the patch because of some issues with ATI cards, and yeah, yep. So I don't know if anybody's actually using it, but I mean, and that was an insignificant update anyway. So one thing that kind of confuses me about what they've said about DirectX 11 so far is it seems like a really minor update. Makes me wonder why they didn't just call it DirectX 10.5 and avoid the confusion that's going to be inevitable, where people are going to buy are going to like hold off buying graphics cards. Like, oh,
because,
I don't want DX10. I want
DX11. Because, Dan, this one goes to 11.
But
yes.
Apparently,
but
the,
apparently it's going to be backward compatible with DX10 hardware, which you know, again, if it's not a major update, why are you calling it DirectX 11? But it's still like a year or two out. It's supposed to launch with the next version of Windows, but will also work on Windows Vista. So it's not going to work on XP, but they're not going to pull the same thing with DirectX 10 they did, where you know, you have to buy Windows Vista to use it.
Moving on. Okay, PC Gamer Malaysia. A little bit off the reservation this week. Little bit high.
I didn't even know there was a PCG Malaysia.
I should explain that there are, so there's, you know, there's PC Gamer US, and then there's PC Gamer UK, and then there are lots and lots of PC Gamer issues that show up in various parts of the world, but they are licensees. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's a PC Gamer UK staff that generates original content. There's us, we generate original content, and then there are all these licensees, and there include Malaysia and Italy and all Russia, all sorts of other places. And so what they do is they actually take stories from us, but they're not, they're, I don't completely understand how it works, but they're not the same as us. And proof of this is the fact that PC Gamer Malaysia ran a story announcing Grand Theft Auto 4 will soon be on the PC. And we got emails about it, and our counterparts in the UK got emails about it, and we were all like, huh? Where did this come from?
My reaction was, if you had asked me a week ago if we had a PC Gamer Malaysia, I would have said, I have no idea. So...
So have you guys been, like, published in Malaysia, like, individually? Like, you can say, yeah, I've written for Malaysians. It's no big deal.
I'm sure they have published their content, yeah.
But we've done a little bit of digging, and the latest story I heard, and this is not confirmed, but the latest story I heard is that apparently somebody at PC Gamer Malaysia saw something at retail where somebody was taking pre-orders for GTA 4, and so they assumed, well, that's confirmation. It's coming on PC.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting. Now, all of that said, even though we have no confirmation that it's coming, I think we can all pretty much agree it's going to come for the PC. All the other ones have.
Yeah. It's only a matter of time.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's hilarious that these guys were like, whoop, somebody's taking pre-orders. That must be true.
Time to make a name for ourselves.
It's a nice looking cover.
It's you know, standard GTA 4 art. I mean, it can't be like the anything special they got for it, because 2K didn't even know about it. So
we should make up a cover. What should we put on our cover that we just wish to be true?
Well,
anybody?
Something about me, please.
Andy Salisbury for president of the ESA. Why not?
That'd be a fun couple months, wouldn't it?
Why don't we just announce Diablo 4 right now?
That's a good plan. I like that. The September issue is on sale. Speaking of issues, ours, which is on the up and up. That's right. Is now on sale. What's on our... It's the Fallout 3 cover, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's a good story, people. You should go buy it. Really, it's good stuff.
I've actually gotten a lot of positive feedback on this one. I think probably more positive feedback on this story than pretty much any story I've written thus far. So I was very proud of it when it went out. So
he's got no hate mail.
Even on the No Mutants Allowed forum, they liked it. And those guys are really hard to please.
Do you want to explain what that is to people who don't know?
It's like a really hardcore Fallout fan site where that it's pretty much, it's borderline cult kind of thing. And that might be going too far, but they are very, very protective of the original Fallout, Fallout 1 and 2. And any deviation from that is basically met with, you know, a few pages worth of forum flames, basically calling for you know, lynchings and that sort of thing. That again may be going a little too far, although they do
a little bit.
They do fine. They you know, borderline. You know, it's stuff that it probably shouldn't be taken seriously, but you know.
But the good news is they haven't threatened Dan's life at all.
No death threats yet so far for this story.
Poor Evan's going, why did I take this job? I bet nobody ever threatened him in the Daily Herald, did they? Yeah.
No, I mean they've actually been pretty cool about this story. There were very few few negative comments on that thread. I was reading that briefly and it's one of the few threads on there I've read that doesn't call anybody any nasty names.
Yeah, in the story, I really like the fact box we had with all the special and the skills listed in there. I love seeing the little icons for that and the details.
Yeah, their art style for that. They pretty much nailed exactly the original Pip-Boy or Vault-Boy, sorry, Vault-Boy art style, which I love to see because there was something I think it was in the in Fallout Tactics they changed it a little bit and it didn't look quite right, but this they nailed it exactly. So
I actually was playing Fallout 2 last weekend.
Oh, nice!
Yeah, it was fun. I was enjoying myself, but I was telling Dan it's kind of I was playing it on my laptop, on which it runs just fine, and I was sort of having problems because you need to sort of use both mouse buttons. It just was it was such a sort of old school interface. Like I just had a few problems kind of getting up to speed, but it's fun. I'm enjoying it.
I don't think there's any part of it that actually requires. Well, I guess you do need to use the right click to
open doors and stuff.
Well, use modes. But
right.
I don't know. I it's hard to hold requiring two mouse buttons again in the interface.
And I wasn't holding it against it. Yeah, no, it was so funny to play a game like that. I just hadn't played a game like that in a long time. But it was fun. I'm enjoying myself. Folks, I'm going to pimp it. I'm going to pimp it again. Showdown Land 2008. We're buying our tickets. We're going to be there. We want to see
you. I can't wait.
Worcester, Massachusetts, September 5th through 7th. This is not confirmed, but I believe the way it's going to work out is that Logan and I will be at the Worcester show. Logan and Evan and Dan will be at the San Mateo show, and then either Dan and I or Evan and I will be at the Peoria show. And that's just from our end. The Maximum PC guys will be at various shows as well. So it's only $40 through July 31st. I can't get into, because it's not announced yet, the kind of swag we're going to be giving out at the show, but let me tell you this, it will be worth your money. It's $40. You will get all that back in swag and in the love of your fellow PC gamers. Oh, so much more than that $40. So sign up. We really want to see you there. It's fun. And Andy Bauman.
Yo.
You're going to be coming to the San Mateo show, right?
That's correct. I actually attended a LAN event like last weekend here in Salt Lake, and it like got me so excited to come out and have an even bigger one, because this one was like fairly small. But the tournaments were amazing, and like seeing TF2 played in a tournament setting got me like so pumped up to come out.
Oh, good. So we're going to be doing some really interesting stuff, peeps. We're going to people are going to have opportunities to win guest spots on the podcasts. We're going to be doing some great case mod contests. The winners are going to actually have their cases photographed, and they're going to show up in the magazine in Maximum PC and PC Gamer. So fun stuff.
Nice.
Showdownland.com is the URL, and you can find information there. You can register there, et cetera, et cetera.
Operators are standing by.
Yes, indeed they are.
Yeah, this is Mike from Sherwood, Arkansas, a.k.a. Chains 101. I was wanting to know, I ask you a question about basically when you get inside information, like for your cover stories and stuff that you can't talk about, do you approach the company or does the company approach you guys and say, we want to do an exclusive, yada, yada, yada? And things like Diablo 3 that was announced from Blizzard, of course, this last Saturday, is that something that you are privy to, or is it something that you guys just have no clue, just like us? And also, Logan Decker has, Cat Fantastic, but I think Andy, because of his poop socking, should have Scat Fantastic. That would be great. Love the podcast. Thank you, guys. As always, you do a great job.
Scat Fantastic.
Which Andy? I'm going to...
you can fight over it.
Yeah, you probably poop sock more than I do, so...
In all fairness, I probably do.
I'm just a fan of the term, of. Really. I just love the way it sounds, the way it rolls off the tongue.
It does.
I just think that, you know, from certain perspectives, Cats can be seen as fantastic. I just don't see how Scat can be seen as fantastic.
Good point.
Agreed.
Yes. You spent time on the internet, right? Because there are some people.
Have you seen RateMyPoo.com?
No.
No, and I'm not going to.
I think
to.
It's kind of old, well, but it's good stuff. Sad. It's good stuff.
Anyway.
Makes me a sad panda. So, when we get insider info, do we approach them or do they approach us? To be honest, both of them, both happen. Certainly, when we know that there are certain games, either by rumor or otherwise, in the works, we will, you know, contact developers or publishers to say, hey,
I believe nag is the word.
Yeah, there is some nagging sometimes. To say, listen, when you're ready to announce this information or talk more about it, we'd like to be the ones who get to do so. Now, part of the reason that kind of works out is because they know that they can trust us to do a good job with the information. They know they can trust us to be fair and honest and to do a thorough job reporting on whatever it is that we're reporting on. So, but something like Diablo 3, is that something we were privy to? We knew something was going to be announced, but we did not know what it was. Even so much so that I knew that we wanted to, that's our October cover story. And I suspected that Diablo 3 was going to be the announcement and was actually trying to do a deal with Blizzard to do a cover story on it. But even up to the point that they were saying, yeah, you can do the story, because it hadn't been announced yet, they wouldn't say the name of the game. We were talking like in code. So we were privy to the fact that something was going to happen, and that our powers of deduction were such that we pretty much knew what it was going to be, but we did not get told before anybody else. I found out in the audience along with everybody else who was at the WoW event.
Blizzard, though, is kind of almost an exception to the rule. I mean, generally, they'll tell us in advance, and, you know, we can say, hey, we know something's coming, but we can't say what it is.
Right.
But, yeah.
But just so people Blizzard, know, the way exclusives in general work, you know, all the only, you know, quote-unquote deal that gets made is that we have information that we will have for a certain period of time before it goes out to other news outlets. So that's the only sort of, like, deal that gets made. Like, maybe we'll get, I don't think it's ever happened, maybe just a couple times, that we've actually gotten screens and information that then were not put out to the rest of the news community. And even if the company didn't put them out, obviously we did when we published the story. So there's no, I mean, that's generally how it works is, for example, we'll say, okay, we know we're going to get such and such a story. Could you please wait until our story has been on the newsstand for a week before you start granting interviews and handing out assets to other news outlets? So that's generally how an exclusive works.
And it's worth saying, once again, that no money changes hands. What we get out of it is we get the attention from this announcement. What they get out of it is they get their game featured prominently. And we wouldn't do an exclusive on a game we weren't excited about and want to feature prominently.
We are offered exclusives that we turn down.
Yeah. So they get it, what they get out of it is that it's presented well by people that know what they're talking about and can write worth a damn. So that's the only exchange that takes place.
Is it worth giving any lip service to? Yeah, I just said it. To how the online like space is changing the way that works, or is it? Because I mean, for me, I'd rather read about it in the magazine. But I don't know. Maybe some people are like, "Well, put it up on the website, like so it's instant," or you know, whatever.
There, you know, it's interesting that you say that because it speaks to one part of a much larger puzzle that I think everyone in every area of journalism, not just game journalism, is kind of trying to sort out. In so much as there is no such thing as like regional information anymore. And so the idea that there are, and we run into this all the time, that very much the way public relations from the publisher and developer side works is they will still have the idea that like, oh, we can have, this will be the North American exclusive and this will be the European exclusive, or you can only have these screens for this part of the world, but we're going to give another outlet in another part of the world this screens, completely ignoring the fact that the internet is the internet, and the minute somebody scans something and puts it up, it's a worldwide story. So it's a bit of a struggle. Everyone is trying to figure out how to, you know, everybody's got jobs to do. Like our job is to get the information out there to our readers and to help people make informed decisions about you know, what games they should play and buy. On the other side, the PR people, their job is to release the right information to the most amount of people kind of at the right time. But
and in this case, with Fallout, you can read that story online. It doesn't have quite everything on there. It doesn't have like the stuff about all the skills and perks in there. But it does have an extended interview that we couldn't fit in the magazine because it was we had room for about 500 or 600 words of the interview, and the interview was about 3,500 words long.
But so. Part of the reason that we've started to do that, started to put our stories online when they're hitting subscribers, is because I would much rather that we're in control of putting up something that looks good and that people can read and that isn't like mussy and scanned and gross looking. Because the truth is, as soon as people get the magazine, they scan it and put it online. You know, there is sort of no such thing anymore as oh, well, no one will see it until it hits newsstands. That's just not the case. That's the way it's kind of affected things for us. Let's have a reverent moment of silence.
Yeah, I was like, anybody else want to chime in?
And scene.
Did you see that comment? Let me try and find it on the recent podcast post where someone was talking about that game, that book about professional gaming.
I actually just bought it. Oh. I just bought it off Amazon. I haven't started reading it yet. I just got it yesterday, but I'm going to start reading it. Game Boys.
And they were saying how the writer talks about PC Gamer and calls it something bad. Almost.
Yeah, but you know what? I got to be honest. Like, we've heard this so many times. I shouldn't even read the book because I know it's just going to incense me and I'll have to write letters to that guy. The truth is, it's very... much like, you know, many things of this ilk, when somebody writes about a community that they haven't been a part of, in my opinion, it detracts a little bit from what they, you know, from what they have to say about it. But
okay. It's also just you know, it's entertainment journalism. You know, it by nature, it is a catalog of products that you know that this certain group of people is going to be interested in. But we comment on it and we don't universally love them, so I don't know what exactly his point was. Like, a catalog is just, hey, here's this, it's great. That's not what we do.
I agree. And I think he was making the comparison to Gameplay HD, the television channel.
Oh.
Right.
Which is strange.
Huh.
Anyway.
Hi, PC Gamer crew. This is Ryan from Cleveland, Ohio. I was catching up on some podcasts, and I believe it was Logan was talking about that new DOS keyboard and how he likes the quick symphony that he hears when he types. And give me a question: what do you guys look for in a keyboard, for gaming? I was looking at the SteelSeries keyboard, but didn't want to shell out the $140 for it, so I ended up opting for the very cheap $4 keyboard at Micro Center. Couldn't be happier. My 2-year-old daughter spilled grape juice all over it, so I threw it out and bought a new one, and it works like a charm. So I was just curious: what do you guys look for? Thanks.
You didn't have to. You could have just put it through the dishwasher.
Exactly.
I'm serious. It worked.
No, actually, yep. that's if your keyboard is dirty. The problem is if you spill liquid on the keyboard while it's plugged in, then you're in trouble because it'll sort it out. If you do put your keyboard in the dishwasher, you have to let it thoroughly dry before you use it.
Like for a week.
Yeah. Otherwise, you plug it in and it fries. So what do we look for in a keyboard? Well, the problem we generally have with cheap keyboards is that they the key buffer is pretty small, so like pushing more than a couple keys at a time it'll beep at you, and it doesn't actually register that keyboard that keystroke.
All right, yeah.
So that's an issue. Also, you know, we like a lot of things like media controls on the keyboard. Macro keys are also very nice. Right now I'm using the Cytec Cyborg keyboard, which is actually pretty ridiculous. It's got a ridiculous in a kind of a cool way. It's got like individual lighting options for each key group. Like you can light the WASD keys like orange and everything else green, or it's pretty crazy what they can come up with. I also like to see a lot of USB port, like a USB hub built into the keyboard. Mm-hmm. Although what I've been seeing lately a lot, though, is people putting like USB 1.1 on the keyboard. So you plug in a USB 2 port on the back of your computer, and you're basically getting downgraded to 1.1. So if you plug in like a USB stick drive, it goes super slow, which defeats the entire purpose of having ports on your keyboard except to plug in your mouse. What else do we look for?
I don't know. I'm personally a big fan of the Logitech G15 as probably
yes.
you know, carbon copies that's going to sound. But as somebody
I use that at home.
Yeah, as somebody who plays like a lot of games with a lot of people, like in World of Warcraft, I'm a big raider. There's the little screen on there which can give me like a little readout and tell me who's talking or you know what's happening in my game and stuff. And all the macro keys are pretty convenient too.
Although I find that LCD a little bit superfluous. I mean, I generally use it for like when Fraps is running, it'll show me frame rate graph, or I just use it to like keep track of the time while I'm on there. I use the clock with the CPU and RAM monitor. Most of them that display like information for that's going on in game, I don't really want to look away from the screen to get that information. So
well, when there's 25 different people, you know, for me it's
that's
nice.
True. That's true. Mm-hmm. It is a very WoW friendly keyboard.
It really is.
I guess beyond that, just you know, the tactile sense of the keys. Some keyboards just feel cheap. Whereas the SteelSeries one that the color was discussed was mentioning, I actually really didn't like that one because it was noisy but not like the DOS keyboard was. It didn't have quite the right clack to it, and that's just a personal taste thing, I guess. But beyond that, that keyboard has virtually no actual features. It has an enormous keyboard, the key buffer, though. You can press every key on the board at the same time, and it'll register them all. But beyond that, not much going for it. So we actually didn't rate that very highly in the magazine, because it's like you said, $140 for something with virtually no features.
I use the Razer Lycosis keyboard at home, and it's like really slick, black, like nice lighting, like blue, and then you can set the WSD key to only be lit, which is always fun. And the keys are like a texture, they're like really rubbery, get a good grip on them, they're really nice. And what I look for in a gaming keyboard, I think it's cool to have a gaming keyboard, because then like people come over, they see your keyboard, they get really intimidated, they're like, whoa, what's going on here? Like, they don't like using your computer and stuff, they like get really scared of it, and you're like, alright, yeah, like what up?
It's a psychological factor.
She'll always hop on my computer like, can I check my email? I'm like, yeah, sure. She's like, what is this?
Yeah, dude, like girls get so intimidated with my computer. I'm just like, yeah, you better stay away, you know, step away.
What are those? What is that word?
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
The DOS keyboard is essentially the most intimidating keyboard, though. Well, the one with no key stickers.
Unlabeled keys. Yeah,
unlabeled. So that would be one I really want to get someday. I don't know if I'm ready for it yet, though.
Yeah, with the Lycosa, can't you just illuminate the WASD keys too and things like that?
Yeah, it's like
yeah.
The one that Dan has sounds a lot cooler though, where you can change the color of the WSAD.
That's nice.
Yeah, you can just light that. You can just light the numeric keypad. You can just light the arrows.
My dad actually has that one. Crazy. It's really cool. Yeah, my dad's a gamer.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
What's he playing?
He plays a lot of Battlefield. He and his friend. He's actually the top rank you can get, with the exception of the like world one that you
no
have to
way.
Be calculated each week. Yeah, he's kind of a big deal on those internets.
That's awesome.
You know, yeah, cool. I should say about the keyboard. Getting back to the cyborg real quick, not to take away from your dad, Andy. Props to your dad. But
yeah, come on. 30 seconds.
It has this touch sensitive. Panel up at the top where it has the media controls and things like that and all the lighting controls. I think touch is kind of wasted there, just because it's hard to tell if it's working, especially like the media controls. So it would be nice to have actual push buttons there.
Same looks with the cool, Lycosis. It's the media controls are like just touch, and it's hard to see if it's working.
I don't like touch buttons at all, even. Like I've got some on my cell phone and they're just annoying.
Yeah.
Except for the iPhone.
End of keyboard discussion.
Okay.
Another question.
Gone for days.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast, Cliff out in Anaheim, California. Always look forward to your podcast. You guys over there do such a great job. Hey, more of a request today. I know a while back you guys used to do some of those exclusive interviews with game developers, and I would love to hear some more of those interviews. Hopefully you guys can score a couple more interviews with some of these great game developers out there so that we could listen to them. Because it's always a real treat when we find out that you guys have one of those exclusive interviews. Anyway, keep up the great work, and that is all.
Well, you know what? Ask and you shall receive.
Yeah.
Because, Dan, don't we have somebody coming up from...
From Firaxis. And it'll be a few weeks before that one.
It's still coming.
I was going to say, though, on the topic of interviews, I was reading like Men's Journal and Esquire or something recently, and the interviews they do, I mean, those kind of magazines where they take a movie star or somebody, and it's sort of like the tale of the writer and the person they're interviewing, like getting in a car, driving down to Mexico, you know, hanging out with people, buying tacos and stuff like that. How cool would it be to get in a car with like Will Wright or Sid Meier and just drive out in the middle of nowhere to Nevada or something, go to a restaurant and write it all down? Like, I think it'd be amazing if we could do something like that.
Yeah, actually, next week, our next cover story is we're reviewing Spore, and next week we are very lucky to have pretty much unfettered access to the Maxis Studios, including Will. So that's awesome. Where we're spending next Friday. Yeah, so we're going to take a camera out there, and actually, that's what we should do. You guys have any questions for Will Wright or Carol Shaw or Lucy Bradshaw? Call in, write in with them. Like, we'd love to know what you'd like us to ask them, because we're probably the only outlet that's going to get to sit down with those guys and spend a bunch of time with them. I don't know if we're going to have tacos, but...
Can I come film it?
What's that?
That's my question. Can I come film
Can
it?
You come come on down! Woo. Yeah, so that's going to be good stuff. That's not something probably that will run on the podcast, but it definitely will run on Games Radar. We do some playlists, some lists of playing.
I think we should.
Evan, what are you playing? Are you playing Pack Up My Stuff So I Can Move?
Also known as Tetris, yeah.
IRL Tetris.
I might have made the mistake, I don't know if it's a mistake yet, of I signed up for an EVE Online account, because I'm a huge, I love sci-fi.
Interesting.
However, that's a little like... sort of having another job when I'm just starting this job, so I don't know how long it'll last.
We frown upon moonlighting here, Evan.
Yeah, absolutely. But otherwise, I've been playing TF2. I just got the back burner finally, legitimately, as Pyro.
So, oh, cool.
That's fun.
Well, back burner is, remind me what that is.
Yeah, it gives the Pyro 50 more hit points. Basically, it deals automatic critical hits when attacking from behind, and it removes like the air blaster feature on the normal flamethrower, so it hurts people.
Me likey. Dan Stapleton, I kind of know a little bit of what you're playing, but why don't you?
Let's see.
Help people.
I actually got sucked back into Oblivion lately because I never
really?
Like finished it. Mm. I never finished it the first time through. And I was playing with some mods. I installed Francesco's leveled creatures mod, although I was getting my ass kicked. So I kind of went back and uninstalled that, and I've started playing through
normal.
You know, normally now, yeah, with a few like texture enhancement packs. And Kristen, am I supposed to be talking about all the other stuff?
Sure. I wouldn't. Let's not talk about it. But you can say what you're playing.
Well, in that case, I'm playing some Spore.
Whoa.
But we just got
so
that.
So am I.
Just got that yesterday. So,
yeah, we actually got our hands on 3 copies of it. So, Logs, Dan, and I are all checking it out right now. So it will be a triple whammy review for next month. But yeah, I don't want to talk too much yet. We're all playing sort of different parts of it and kind of playing it different ways. So, because it very much lends itself to that. So that's what we're doing. Right now, that's what I'm playing. And then, of course, I played Fallout 2 a little bit last weekend. And we'll probably play some more. I tried to play Beyond Good and Evil on using my GameTap account, and I couldn't get the sound to work. It wasn't the sound. Like, the sound started working, and then I couldn't get the game to load, so that was kind of bumming me out.
All the cool kids are playing it.
Yeah.
Mostly just me. That's what I've been playing as a
segue. Who, sorry?
I've been playing Beyond Good and Evil here and there, trying to pick my way through it as best as I can with my... lifestyle schedule. What? I don't know what that means. It's a really rad game. I love the music and stuff in it too. There you go. And TF2 is still amazing fun.
Andy Salisbury, what is your lifestyle schedule allow for?
My lifestyle schedule has come to a grinding halt because I finally got into the World of Warcraft expansion beta.
Oh no.
Oh.
And it is really cool. It's, you know, as the main class that I normally play, if there's any class that would make me not want to play it, it's the Death Knight, because it is loads of fun. It's really, really a cool class. So I'm enjoying that, and I've also been updating my my blog a lot about it, so, you know.
Give us the URL.
Link it up.
Yeah, the URL is rogueseyeview@blogspot.com. Right now I'm mostly taking it from a rogue class's point of view. It follows, you know, me and just intricacies of the rogue class to help any other rogues out there to play better, but, you know, this Death Knight thing is really really caught my fancy, so, yeah, who knows? Let me know how people feel.
I urge everybody to check out Andy's blog. It's good stuff. Andy B and Evan, do you guys have blogs? Personal blogs?
No. I do not. No.
I'm scared of blogging, mostly because I can't write very well. So, there you go.
I'm not sure where you got the idea that that was a necessary component of blogging.
Oh, good point, yeah.
Well, I think that's it, friends. I think we've reached the end of another scintillating podcast. Andy B., would you like to give out the pertinent phone number for people to call in?
The key number you need to remember for dialing into the mailbox is the 1-877, the 404, and the 1337. And then the extension is 724, and it gets you into our mailbox.
Those are some excellent numbers. If you'd like to subscribe to the magazine, and we would love it if you did, please visit gamesradar.com/PC, and on the left-hand side in a delightful purple box, you will see information on subscribing to the magazine. And definitely, we urge you, visit showdownland.com. Check it out, register, jump on the forums, etc. Thank you all very much for being here this week. We will see you next week. We'll be podcasting on Tuesday of next week instead of Thursday, so check it out then. Ciao.
If anybody hasn't played BioShock yet, it's $15 on Steam this weekend.
Really?
Oh, man.
Yep. Fun.
God, you know what? That was one of the more interesting... I didn't want to bring it up on the podcast, but that was one of the more interesting things that Logan and I saw at E3 was the BioShock PS3 stuff.
Really?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because instead of them trying to like shoehorn some new content into what was already a really good existing story, they're doing these new things that are sort of like... mini chapters that kind of fit into the story where you do mm-hmm. they're almost like mini games, I would call them, like expanded mini games, and it was interesting. I was really, we were pretty happy with the way they did it. They still fit in and they're still BioShockian and interesting, but they didn't try to do some weird thing to like muck up what was already a really well put together story. So
that's cool, because I remember reading they're bringing in all these companies to help them port it. So it's good they're actually making a run at it.
Yeah, it looked good. We were impressed. Not that neither of us owns a PS3, but
when does Lich King come out?
Officially? I don't know, but if I had to guess, given where it's at right now and given how Blizzard is Blizzard, I'd probably say late this year.
Oh really?
September? Yeah, I'd say September, so October.
They don't even they don't have a firm date yet.
No.
Kristen, the Twitter isn't supposed to make any sense. Not what you're doing on the podcast. That still has to make sense.
She's practicing.
I'm having a little samba moment. What, you're going to tell me you never have a little samba moment?
I am going to tell you that. I'm preparing right now to tell you that.
My entire day is a large samba moment.
Samba moment.
It was when I first got into playing it with all the OXM guys. I picked up a copy of Gears of War.
Yeah.
And it always ended up being 2v2, and it was me and Jeremy against other people. So, you know, I just got to know the guy.
Nice. Yeah, like, I remember reading his articles and stuff. And then when they started the podcast, I was like, oh shit, that's Jeremy?
I know.
It was cool to hear him. And like,
that was the coolest thing for me when I first started working there. It's like my first day I was there. It was like, you know, it was when it was like Greg was editor in chief and Shiaki and Joe were there and stuff.
Like all
and
the like, old I got school. There.
Yeah, and I felt so cool because I got there and Norm was the only person that wasn't there. And this is going to sound really nerdy, but literally, like, Norm walked in and I was like, oh my god, that's Norman Chan. Like,
yeah, no, I'm, dude, I don't even know what I'm going to be like when I, like, go out there and finally, like, meet everybody. I'm going to be like, what's up, guys?